Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. Today, our guest, Beth Macnica. She is Director of Health and Well-Being at Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you've got a lot to talk about. At the top of it is your fourth annual Food as Medicine Symposium coming up on the 18th and 19th. Just an overview to start with that, because inside it, there's so many issues here that are very relevant to our city for sure. But let's just talk about the symposium to start.
Sure. Yep. So this is our fourth year having it. Started during COVID, really, which exposed the gaps in our food system and a lot of the health inequities. But just overall, our goal is to raise awareness. We want to inform, educate, inspire people to really jump into this food as medicine movement. We have a seat for you, no matter what background you're from, all walks of life, all sectors, all industries. If you're in the wellness space, health inequity, you name it, we have a seat for you at the table.
But at the same time, and just to quote you here, Black, Indigenous, and people of color carry a disproportionately higher burden of disease and unmet social related needs. Now, this is not something that's new to our program. We most certainly have touched upon that. But that, in essence, is the mission statement, to address that, right, as much as anything. Like you said, everybody's invited, everybody's welcome. But there's a specific, really, goal involved in this.
Yes, that is the core and the foundation. That is the beating heart of the symposium, and that was one of the major reasons why we started it. There are major, major disparities in our community, especially within the city of Buffalo. You're talking, it could be 12 to 20 year difference in life expectancy in neighborhoods of color compared to white neighborhoods. And we know that when we talk about food insecurity, access to a vehicle to even get healthy food, mental health disparities, in the East Side are significantly higher. And so these communities are facing such a large burden of social related needs and health inequities and health disparities. Like, we need to talk about it and bring in experts from other communities who are working on these issues as well to talk with people in our city to kind of tackle this together.
So on May 14th, 2022, when the Tops on Jefferson Avenue was attacked, when you heard people talking about food insecurity and food desert, this was not new to you.
Unfortunately, it is a horrible, horrible thing that happened to our community. And our community was targeted by violence, by a white supremacist, because of the isolation and concentration we have of Black people. 80% of Buffalo's residents live on the East Side. So you can clearly look at the dividing line on each side of Main Street, at how segregated our city is. And we just so happen to be the highest isolation and concentrated area by this racist. Horrible, horrible events. But when we talk about food insecurity and nutrition insecurity, I like to use the word food apartheid.
Okay.
Instead of food deserts, because a desert is something that's naturally occurring. And this, what we're dealing with, there's nothing natural about this. The community was designed to be this way by years of discriminatory policies and practices that have led to what it is today. And so we find that food apartheid is a better way to describe that situation.
Appreciate the clarification for that, and also a well-spoken definition as well. So long, you know, not long before, but you had the symposium started 2 years before that. And it's interesting, as you were telling me about the first one, it was in 2020, right? Right in the middle of COVID-19. So when you did your symposium, You couldn't have anybody in-house. You had to do it online. Yet the interest level is remarkable. Talk about it.
Yes. So, you know, we could not be in person. We did not have a budget for this event, but we felt that it was quite urgent and we needed to convene a group to just raise awareness. Whoever showed up, we would have been happy if 10 people showed up on the Zoom. And despite that, we were able to engage between 150 and 200 people the entire day on a Saturday. You know, it was a rainy day in Buffalo, but so that always helps. But
right.
For the entire day.
Yeah, they stayed with it.
Yes.
What do you make of that? Because we've talked before we went on the air about the success and how this has built and grown. But the fact that people stayed with it, to me, that is remarkable on so many levels. I try to do Zoom calls and different things along those lines, training. Very difficult just from my personal perspective to stay with something. But yet here you are with 150 to 200 people who are all online talking about something that they've never really maybe had an opportunity to hear about. And they're staying with it all day long. What did you make of that?
I think it is because of the people, the passionate people that we have in our city who want to make a difference, who see and serve the communities who are most in need every day. And they know that people are struggling, and they know that the more we collaborate, the better we can do at serving these populations. I just know that from working personally and having relationships with a lot of these nonprofits and people working in the space. They're so passionate.
So you see that on a wide scale then?
Yes.
You're seeing many, many groups that are, whether or not they had a full understanding of this issue prior to it or are most certainly embracing it, that they're here and they wanted to help make a difference.
Yes.
That's very impressive to hear that for sure. I mean, it says a lot. I'm just curious from your position, when you talk about the things you're doing and you're talking about this level of interest, maybe outside, family, friends, whatever the case may be, are they as maybe surprised to hear about the level of participation, the level of interest, do you find that? I'm just kind of curious of how those conversations emerge when people tell somebody what you're doing, what you're going to be spending your October 18th and 19th doing. I'm just curious how that falls into place for you.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it depends on who your audience is.
Of course,
right? You know, our culture in Buffalo tailgating and wings, and you know, there's certain pockets of our community that maybe health, we could use more health,
right?
You know, so talking to maybe that pocket of our community would maybe be very surprised,
right,
at this event and would be curious. But I think people, you know that, okay, I'm supposed to eat vegetables and work out. They kind of get the whole healthy thing, but they don't know how, or they don't realize the extent of disparities and that, you know, people are really suffering. And so food has always been like a connection point. It brings people together. It's community. It's creativity. It touches everyone. We're all human. We all need to eat every day to live, and it brings people together. And so I found that, you know, that usually, even if there's maybe some political issues that might be on the side, food has just been always a great connection point. And so people come for that.
So we can find a way together. We can connect. We can do it through food. That's a hopeful thought right there. You also put together this 40 Days to Wellness that happened this summer. Explain what that was.
We just wrapped that up, and it was such an exciting and incredible program. So we engaged 108 participants, mostly from Eastside zip codes. Now, this was a program that was funded by Highmark, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We are so grateful for their support in making this project happen. That was years in the making. And really, it's a healthy habit building program. So we wanted to identify people that were stressed and sick, people that had diabetes, people that had hypertension. These are the leading, you know, causes of disease in our region, and also are most heavily burdened and held and carried by people of color,
right,
and that were also food insecure. And so we were able to actually, we had over 500 people that signed up to,
wow,
participate, that expressed interest, but unfortunately we only had funds to make it available to 108 of them.
Okay.
And so for 6 weeks, they received medically tailored meals. So a medically tailored meal is prepared by a chef and a dietitian with ingredients that are known to help them heal, manage, and treat their conditions, being heart disease and diabetes. They received dietitian coaching. They had mindfulness workshops. They came in for cooking classes. They received grocery bags of fresh produce every week. And then together we went through challenges. We kind of would come on Zoom and talk about how our week went and share our challenges, our small wins, and really built a community. It was really incredible. And they're asking for more. They're all sad that it's over with. And I am too, honestly. They inspired me. You know, healthy living is something I do. And, you know, the participants really inspired me.
Well, lots there to talk about for sure. The mindfulness element of that. Expand on exactly what was made available in that regard.
So, breath work, essentially.
Okay.
And mindfulness and being aware. And so your breath work has such an incredible power to reset your nervous system, especially if you're stressed. And when you look at a population, you know, especially underrepresented populations that have gone through this weathering process where their stress accumulates over time and can actually manifest in physical disease, breathwork can be incredibly powerful in helping them manage and mitigate some of that stress, as well as helping them with their eating behaviors and being mindful about their eating, because sometimes we eat emotionally for emotional reasons.
Oh, absolutely.
To cope.
No doubt about it.
So that was the mindfulness piece.
Yeah, I can almost predict to you stressful days that are coming ahead when I'm going to be plowing into all sorts of stuff that I shouldn't be eating. There's a lot of findings, a lot of data that's going to come out of this, right?
Yes.
And you're going to issue that, some of the findings during the symposium on the 18th and 19th. And I'm not necessarily asking for a spoiler alert here, of course, but talk, if you can, then what are you going to be able to measure? What will you be able to see, hopefully, coming out? It's not necessarily trends or anything like that, but how are things going to be measured?
Right. So it's the program was 6 weeks. So we know going into it, like, we're not expecting these drastic, you know, changes and maybe clinical indicators. You know, there might be some change, but really what we're looking for is transformation in quality of life.
Okay.
Health habits, right? It's the small things that we do every day that really lead up to health. And if the whole purpose of this program was to educate and help people build those small habits every day, and that in a sustainable way so that they can keep going with them.
Okay.
So teaching them how to do it on their own and manage their disease and treat their disease and prevent further progression of their disease or conditions using food and mindfulness. So things that we're measuring, like diet quality, like stress, like energy levels, their function and mobility, their ability to move around throughout the day, how good they feel, just being mindful, even something as simple as just keeping a diary and recording your positive social interactions of, hey, what went really well today? Celebrating those small wins can make a huge difference in mindset and really motivating people to just keep it going.
So it sounds to me that I'll just use the terms, and I'm not all that great at having these terms at my full grasp, but almost of a qualitative look rather than a quantitative look. So a lot of anecdotes, things along those lines, people expressing to themselves what they have gone through in these 40 days.
Yes, we will have some clinical data as well, but that will come at not in the 6 weeks. So we have an additional data collection we'll be doing at 6 months and a year.
Looking at what? Things like blood pressure,
and seeing
sugar levels,
what they've
like
kept up with.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. I see. And doing a follow-up. Well, that's part of part of the program as well. But you must have heard, because it sounds like you have a deep involvement with all of these programs, and you must have heard personally from, if not all of these people so far, some, and you probably have a couple of stories. What can you share?
So on our team right now, we have an incredible intern who was helping us throughout the entire 6 week program. And her background, she's getting her master's of public health at UB, and she's also a wellness coach.
Okay.
And that skill set has been invaluable for our team. And engaging with people, hands-on, people are constantly reaching out to her, being that connection point. People have not only changed their own lives, but also their households. So this is something that's having a domino and kind of multiplier effect. Just because there's one participant doesn't mean we're only affecting one life. So people have brought their families into the cooking classes. They've brought their kids. Some of them have reported weight loss and different things with their blood sugar that we weren't originally anticipating, but they've just reached out and shared with us.
Lots to celebrate in terms of victories. What are you hearing about any challenges, though? Again, just talking about this, I can, human nature, I'm looking at my own, my own habits and how they ebb and flow. What about challenges?
You know, it's funny because you go into this study kind of anticipating, well, people aren't going to want to eat vegetables. They're not going to want to try lentil sloppy joes. Or
lentil sloppy joes. That actually sounds quite good.
They were delicious. I can share the recipe.
Oh, very good.
Or sauteing with water. You know, what? Cooking with water, because, you know, a lot of the times food has such cultural significance. I don't want to change my grandmother's recipe. I don't want to switch my habits. But we found that the participants had such receptivity and openness to trying everything with very little complaints. And we kind of took the approach, you know, we're not going to force people to do what they don't like. So that's part of it, is finding something that you really like and going from there. You know, with some people, obviously, food security and food access is a challenge. And so it's about providing resources and connecting people to all of the incredible services we have in our community to help with that, whether it's SNAP, food stamps, WIC, farmers market nutrition checks, double up food bucks, learning how to grow on their own. Our chef had some incredible like tips to kind of grow food in your kitchen, saving money on spices and things like that. So I think, yeah, it's a lot of education.
We are talking with Beth Macnica. She is with the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, the Director of Health and Well-Being at the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. We just talked about their 40 Days to Wellness program that they just completed this summer with 108 folks who got involved. And sounds like a lot have not only learned some valuable lessons, but also perhaps maybe some life-changing elements there as well. Coming up on the 18th and 19th, though, is the fourth annual Food as Medicine Symposium. So we did touch upon this a little bit at the start. All right, let's get into some of the different elements. I don't know how much we've mentioned since we started recording, but things that we talked about beforehand. I'm just going to start jumping around. You've got a farm tour as part of it.
Yes.
Farm tour. How is that going to work? There's no farm on the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, right?
Well, not yet.
I guess that's the... That's a great question. I will have you back when you break ground on that, Beth. But yeah, what about the farm tours?
Yes. So we love to just start the event off with a farm tour to really ground people and help them get to know the food system in our area, in our community. So we like to start with the urban farms, one on the west side and one on the east side, just to get an idea of the different, you know, because food as medicine is not just at the individual level, but it's also at the population level. Like, where is our food coming from? Knowing your food system, knowing your farmer, that is food as medicine. So yeah, we're starting at Five Loaves Farm. We'll get to know some of the programs and all the work that they do in the community. And from there, we'll move to Buffalo Go Green on the east side. And that's where we'll have our networking event. We're having functional beverages, which I'm really excited about.
Functional beverages? What is functional beverages?
So these are known as non-alcoholic
okay.
drinks that have ingredients like adaptogens, herbs, spices, fruits that have functional purposes for the body.
Well, okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that sounds like something worth the price of admission there for sure. When you go to these farms, we talked a little bit about your background before we went on the air. You go to these farms. Right here in the city of Buffalo, utilizing space in incredible, incredible fashions. Do you see possibilities? Do you see, we've talked about food insecurity, which of course is a huge issue in the city of Buffalo and a lot of places as well. Do you see possibilities? Do you see there's an opportunity, there are opportunities to really tackle these issues not just in a, you know, a meaningful, targeted way, but in a widespread way. What
yes.
do you see?
So I've spent a lot of time with farmers, especially with our farm to hospital program and building up the supply chain. And I have to tell you, and I've volunteered on a couple farms on a personal level. Hmm. Farmers are are the most innovative people. Yeah. I truly believe that.
After marrying into a family of them, I understand that very much so.
just completely, just so innovative and so passionate and truly believe in their mission. And I think there's a lot happening right now in the healthcare space, in the policy space, especially to make healthy foods more accessible and affordable for people. So in 2022, the White House had its first convening in over 50 years on hunger, nutrition, and health.
In 50 years.
And so even the federal government is looking at food policy and food as medicine and all these different things. And the reason why I'm saying this is our food system right now provides a lot of subsidies for corn, soy, wheat, which makes cheap processed food or processed food very cheap and affordable. And so if we're able to make subsidies on kale and broccoli and carrots and things like that, we'll find, I think, more people going into farming, because right now farming is not really a viable business model. A lot of farmers are actually leaving the business right. to have other careers and don't make enough money. So in Buffalo, it's really amazing to see all of the urban farmers that we have and the incredible work that they're doing. And so many of them are fighting the food disparities and providing fresh produce to mobile markets and taking them to communities that need it the most. And so that's sort of the type of work that we want to highlight. And Buffalo Go Green, especially, they work with community health centers of Buffalo to provide the fresh produce and produce prescriptions.
But is there enough? Right now, I know you just kind of went through that with policy, but right now, just maybe just not enough available to, I mean, this is a huge issue. The health disparities are huge, especially here in the city of Buffalo. Is there enough?
We do not produce enough fruits and vegetables for the entire American population to eat what is recommended for a healthy diet. We do not. This is why it is so important to empower people to get back to the garden and grow whatever you can. I mean, the minute people walk onto a garden, their eyes light up, you smell everything, you see green, your blood pressure reduces, you feel less stressed. It's such a wonderful experience to garden and get your hands in the soil, and it's, you know, providing food and nutrition.
You're busy. Do you have time for gardening?
Not these days.
Okay. I had a feeling that might be the case. All right. So I got off on the farming element of it, and I appreciate the thought on the policy. It was quite enlightening. So thank you for that. It's something that most certainly could use a lot of follow-up. Back to the symposium then. So, all right, after the great networking event and having these, what was the name of the drink?
They're functional beverages.
Functional beverages. After having some functional beverages. If I said that to my friends, they'd probably think I meant something totally different. What else will people say? There's cooking demonstrations as well, right?
There's cooking demonstrations. So there's a parent-child cooking class.
Okay.
Which we're really excited. We'll have 10 families doing that. And then we have a cooking demo of medically tailored meals. So Evergreen Health has an incredible medically tailored meal program.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
What is medically tailored? What are we, just to expand on that definition, I'm somewhat self-explanatory, but just talk about how that actually works.
Yeah, so it's a chef and a dietitian working together and creating meals using ingredients that help manage someone's condition.
Okay.
So especially with complex medical conditions or people when they have comorbidities, if they have like diabetes, heart disease, maybe they have cancer, there's certain ingredient combinations that help treat their disease.
Okay, very good. All mm-hmm. right, so that's just, and then you have speakers coming from what, all over the country to be part of this?
All over the country, and we even have someone coming from Canada just across the border.
Okay.
All over, so NYU, University at Texas Medical Center, Alameda County Health Department in California.
Wow.
Our keynote is Benjamin Perkins, who was previously the CEO of Wholesome Wave. And he's coming in from Boston, and his whole career in life has been working on the FED principles, which is fidelity, equity, and dignity. And so that's all about any kind of community-based organization or teams that are providing these food as medicine interventions really need to look like the participants they are serving.
Okay.
And so teaching our audience and our leaders in Buffalo and educating us with strategies and giving us the tools to learn how to do that.
So the event, it's interesting because when we started, when you started things off, a free event online, check it out. Now, tickets, are there still tickets available?
There are still tickets available. We extended our early bird until Friday, so until tomorrow.
All right.
October 4th. And then after that, tickets will be the normal price, which is $75 for 2 days, which is an incredible deal because you have the networking event, you get lunch, you have chair massage, you have wellness vendors, poster presentations, just so many incredible things.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so how can people access the tickets?
They can go to bnmc.org and find the symposium on our website, or they can find the tickets right on Eventbrite.
Now, just curious, at the website, are there other options? I mean, are there menu parts of the menu that talk about some of the things that we just talked about, the healthy foods, things that ideas and stuff like that? Is that also there as well?
The programs?
Yeah, I'm curious about that.
Oh, yes. Yep. People can read all about our 40 Days to Wellness work, our Farm to Hospital work that was over 10 years of work that we are really proud of with Kaleida Health in Roswell, bringing local fresh food into their hospital menus, eliminating their deep fat fryers, having more water, getting rid of some of the sugary beverages. We're really proud of that project. You can learn more about our corporate wellness initiatives, bringing meditation, mindfulness, yoga, Ready Bike Share, all just healthy living initiatives for wellness, and our most recent 40 Days to Wellness program.
It's all right there at the website.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming down to our final couple of minutes here with Beth Macnica, the Director of Health and Wellbeing at Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. We've been talking about their upcoming Food as Medicine Symposium, the fourth that they're having. But Beth, I find in you that you seem to have both an understanding of some pretty big issues that go into this, and don't seem to be too awfully afraid to necessarily give an opinion or two. So I often have asked the question for people, and this is an interesting one because what we're talking about here is a big issue. You know, the social determinants of health, something that we've talked about a lot about that in the city of Buffalo. From your perspective, do you have hope? Do you have hope that a lot of these things can be rectified?
I call myself a stubborn optimist.
Okay. All right.
And I think I do have hope. I do. I think there's a lot being done right now, especially in the entrepreneurship space. And that gives me hope because in order to really change, you know, it's taken time for us to get to where we are. It's not going to change overnight. It's going to take time for us to repair. But in the repair process, I think we need to have sustained investment in communities who need it the most, in underrepresented communities. And that sustained investment needs to go towards BIPOC entrepreneurs. And there is such a movement right now of entrepreneurship. And
right here in the city of Buffalo.
Right here in the city of Buffalo, there are multiple organizations who are committed to BIPOC entrepreneurship and also providing funding and investment, and they're there in the community. And that gives me hope because that's what we need. We need initiatives to rebuild the infrastructure that are led by BIPOC entrepreneurs.
Investment, that's an great word to use. And of course, it's very important no matter what we're talking about. But are we talking, is there enough right now public investment? Private sector investment will follow where there's opportunities to find profit. Is there enough public investment?
I certainly believe there's an opportunity for more, for more of that.
And at the same time, you also see opportunities though for private investors to get return on their investment by getting involved in these types of opportunities.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yep.
Well, those are a couple of hopeful things there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And final note, just about food as medicine. What do you want the general public to understand about that?
We all eat every day, and every bite is an opportunity to heal your body.
Every bite is an opportunity to heal. Okay.
And it's never too late.
So when I go down into the concession stand later on and I grab that bag of chips, should I enjoy every bite or just not bite them at all? Okay. Very nice. Beth, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us. This has been a very enlightening conversation.
Thank you.
Beth Macnica is the director of health and well-being at Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. Their fourth annual Food as Medicine Symposium coming up on the 18th and 19th of this month. Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
For our first conversation from the Black Business Block Party, we feature Rachel Eastlack of Tech Buffalo.
And we're here at the Exchange at Beverly Gray. And the Block Party is underway. And with me, Rachel Eastlack of Tech Buffalo. Rachel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is great to talk with you because there's some really interesting things here. Tech Buffalo puts on coding nights here. Just for the uninitiated or for people over the age of 60, what exactly is coding night?
Sure. So Tech Buffalo started Family Code Nights back in February of this year, and it is a paired event for an adult and a youth to come learn together how to code. So we teach entry-level coding through Minecraft education.
All right, so entry-level. So after somebody's done with this, what can they do when they're done going through the Coding Night program?
So we like to say everyone leaves a coder because at the end of the night you have coded,
okay.
But you will be learning block level coding. Okay. So it's really cool because they fit together like puzzle pieces. So it's a great way to learn before you'd move on to something like a Python.
Okay. And so that basic level like that, then do you see it maybe catching on with, I guess there's visual learners and people, book learners, I don't know, I guess all these different things. Do you see it catching on with some folks maybe more than others?
Absolutely. So youth absolutely run away with this.
Okay.
We say the program is recommended for ages 7 to 13. However, we have seen, kiddos as young as 4 be able to fly through this program because youth are so used to being connected with technology and having, those tablets and the laptops and the phones right in their hands. So we've seen that youth actually should be encouraged to enter programs like this much earlier, than those later years in school. So that was something that really was a starting point for us of seeing how we could start introducing coding and this type of tech at a younger age.
And it was interesting before we started recording, you told me that this is a program in essence through Microsoft, right?
Correct.
And you're the only organization in New York State that earned this?
Correct. So we were selected as a TechSpark Fellow back in 2023. And yes, we were the only nonprofit selected from New York. So I want to say there's 48 fellows in total.
Okay. And what do you think made the difference for you guys?
I think Tech Buffalo really stands out because we are the connector. So we are an agency that really likes to sit in the middle of community members, employers, college and university students, educators, and make sure that we're connecting the right pieces and individuals together. So I think that was something that was unique that stood out about us.
So then let me ask them, the right pieces. What are you talking about, the pieces that all came together here?
Sure. So for those who may be interested in starting a tech career and don't know where to begin, we have several different programs. Aside from Family Code Night, we also offer community conversations where we have entry point conversations about those working in the tech fields and perhaps how they were able to get into their field, maybe what educations, what trainings and certifications they completed. But we want to open those to the community so that members are able to come in and ask those basic ground level questions that can help them then get into a tech training program or perhaps, into college and university of their choice.
Now, as you could probably guess, but you're probably too nice to admit to that, when I came of age, there was no such thing as coding opportunities, right? So I guess I'm interested in then, what opportunities are there for someone who just starts out? Again, like you might start out coding a little bit. How far can they take this, and how quickly can they soar, I guess, for lack of a better term?
Well, to steal some of the answers from last night, I think it really comes down to passion. So really depending on, how passionate you are. Like, if you are somebody who really wants to get into coding, there are so many tools and resources out there that you can really dive into and learn quickly. If you're somebody, though, who, maybe is just, I'm a little bit interested, I'm not exactly sure where to start, there are so many other training programs and providers that offer those introductory courses that are usually anywhere from, 4 to 6 weeks long that really help individuals learn then perhaps what portion or what section of tech they would be most interested in and then are able to pursue that from there.
And are there job opportunities, entry-level job opportunities here in this area?
Absolutely. So we have definitely seen that there are many job opportunities in Western New York, and that's such a big part of Tech Buffalo, is we want to make sure that we're able to show that the talent is here and the opportunities are here as well. My colleague who runs our higher education program, she has developed a program called Power Up Tech that works really intently to keep college students from the area here when they graduate, right, and keep them employed and give them a place to live, work, and play in Buffalo. So we want to show community members that Buffalo is a great place to start a tech career or to continue a tech career.
Next, we feature Darren Saxon, the Chief Diversity Officer of the City of Buffalo.
So what does diversity mean to you?
So diversity to me is the one thing that I go around, especially speaking to people who don't look like me. I'm an African-American male. I try to really inform people that diversity is way more than race. Right. When you start looking at the different factors that go into diversity, you have gender, you have sexual orientation, and then you obviously have race, which are the big ones. But when you start looking into different things, for example, you could look into neurodivergency. Someone could be on a spectrum, right? Someone could have a traumatic brain injury. Now, they're not, if you want to say, a functioning person, a normal functioning person, now they may have some issues. You can look at mental health. That's part of diversity as well. You can look at home ownership. You can look at college educated or not. You can look at someone who's a citizen. So diversity is all across the board. It's way more than race.
And how is, having a diverse populace good for a city? Especially a city like Buffalo.
Yeah, so a city like Buffalo, who was traditionally segregated, I believe at one point in time we were the number two most segregated city within the United States. So we know, North Buffalo is primarily Italian and Jewish. Then the east side was primarily Black and Polish. South Buffalo is primarily Irish. The west side was primarily, if you want to say, Latino. And a few different Caucasian races over there as well. But now the city has definitely changed. The population since 2012 started a massive change. You started having new Americans coming in and adding to the fabric of our city. It's making our city a much more vibrant city. They're opening businesses. They're contributing to the community and to the growth of Buffalo.
And some initiatives the city is a part of or taken part in over the years regard to diversity.
Yeah, so we've done a lot of things. I mean, if you look at Mayor Brown has really focused on trying to get large corporations as well as different businesses, even small to mid-sized corporations, to sign the Opportunity Pledge, which is pledging to diversify your staff, to look at equity and inclusion of your staff as well, because everyone wants a voice and they want that voice to be heard. So Mayor Brown has, he's one of the founding members of the Buffalo Purchasing Initiative, which is an initiative to help basically bring more attention to black businesses when we talk about the procurement process with different large companies. So for example, you know, one of the members is Roswell Park. If there is a black business owner who, for example, supplies toilet paper, Roswell Park will try to buy orders from them. So we're talking large orders, you know, large scales. So you have Wegmans, the City of Buffalo, University of Buffalo, Buffalo State, you have ECMC, Catholic Health. So these are large corporations. Tops just joined. So this can be a major boom for a lot of black businesses. Right now we have 703 black businesses within our database for the Buffalo Purchasing Initiative. And if you want to sign up to that, by the way, you can go on the city's website. You can type in MWBE. There will be links. You can email that officer. Her name is Deja Middlebrook. She will send you the information you need to join the Buffalo Purchasing Initiative.
Next, we feature Tony Grant of Moog.
What brings Moog here?
Well, Moog is a wonderful place to work. The work-life balance is phenomenal. But when we look at our population, it's not as diverse or reflective of the community as we'd like it to be. So we're taking this effort, this opportunity to connect with the urban community, to try and let them know that we're here. And just 22 minutes outside of the city is an awesome place to work, where you could have a great living and also stay in Western New York and do some amazing things.
Well, that's interesting to hear. So I guess then the next question is, there are opportunities there?
Yes, it is a space and defense company. We look for engineers, technicians, assemblers, people that can do dispatch. We look for people that have a business mind. I represent the machining side of the business. I'm a machining manager, so we're always looking for students that are interested in math and the sciences, because it's a great opportunity for them to use their mathematical skills and a kind of imagination to create parts and tools and elements that support air and spacecraft.
So, I mean, it's interesting when you lay it out like that, and it sounds like kind of a cool thing to do. But I'm just wondering, you know, and this is, I'm just asking more of your opinion of things, do you think that that understanding is there, or is that a connection that really needs to be cultivated?
It has to be cultivated. You know, I was fortunate enough to have an in-law work at Moog. My wife also started her career there, so I knew about it. But the vast majority of people, especially people in the city, really don't know what we do and that and the opportunity we present to people that want to stay in Western New York but also want to do amazing things. So we need to work a little harder as an organization, as a company, to connect with all areas of the community, and that's why we're here today.
And also, it's interesting that you mentioned how Moog is here trying to maybe, you know, make its workforce a little more diverse. What about the engineering field? I don't have any really understanding of it, but is it a field that could use more diversity?
Absolutely. You know, we were just recently at the National Society of Black Engineering Conference, which was in Atlanta this year. And there were scores of very talented, diverse engineering candidates. But Moog in particular, in Western New York, we've got to do a better job of connecting with UB and Ball State and the local universities who have those chapters. They have black engineering chapters to connect with those people. And often people may not understand the capability or the doors that engineering may open for you, especially if you want to stay local, right? And manufacturing groups typically need engineers to help design and create the parts and products they're trying to sell. So,
you know, it's interesting, Tony, you just made me think of something I've always wondered about. I now know I really wasn't meant to be an engineer, because I can't cook and don't cook unless it means just throwing it in the microwave. So, and this is one of the, maybe it's a little more serious, this particular question here, but it's the kind of question we've been asking quite a bit. And, when it comes to, like, just looking at Buffalo, now maybe little bit more of the wards of Buffalo to a certain extent. And I've had a few of these conversations with people who are from the South or live in the South or have spent a lot of time in both Buffalo and the South. And I'm just curious for you, you know, life was like for young Tony Grant down in South Carolina growing up, and maybe what you see for young kids of color here in Buffalo. And again, if it's we just met about 15 right. minutes ago. It's a kind of a heavy question to ask, but I'm just wondering if you want to explore that a little with me.
Well, for me, you know, I always joke. I said we were poor and I didn't know it, right? Because we just, you know, Dave Chappelle has this joke where his father tells him, you know, we're not poor, we're just broke, right? And so I had a mentality that, you know, I just don't have it yet. But one day, if I follow these steps, I'll be able to have the life I want to live. And I just never had any doubts about that. Just because what I had been exposed to, because I had seen differently. My parents made a big effort to, as annoying as it was, but I went to school outside of my neighborhood for a long time. And just opens your eyes to what's out there, right? And then when you kind of measure yourself against what you see, you realize, hey, it's doable. Right, I can achieve that. And so I think here, that kind of insular nature and that kind of, you know, Buffalo's relatively segregated and, you know, people, a lot of times by their own choice, kind of stay within the confines of their specific designated area. I think it limits your purview of what you can be, right, and what you can achieve. Right? And so there's this prevailing feel that there's nothing to do in Buffalo. Well, maybe you haven't seen it all because you haven't ventured outside of your safe zone. And that could be scary. So, and that's why we're here today as MOG, to venture into the safe zone, right? Okay, so you're not on your own volition going to come out to East Aurora and see what's out there. So we who have been out there, it's incumbent upon us to come back in your safe zone and say, hey, there's other opportunities out there. You know, there are people that are people like you who are building parts that are going on spacecraft. You know, the NASA deputy for Artemis is a black woman, and she came to East Aurora to speak to us about the next phase of Artemis, right? Because we work on it. So here is a black graduate from an HBCU, a woman who is an assistant deputy director at NASA, who stops by in East Aurora and who's leading this phenomenal, very niche, one of rare space expedition, and it's happening and this group, this neighborhood doesn't know about it, right? And so it's our job, just circling back to why we're here, is to say, hey, there's some really, really interesting things going on, and people like you, like me, who look like you are actually involved and can achieve it if you work at it, if you know it's there, right? So
next, we feature Lalita Alexander of UBMD.
So we're part of UMBD training program for CPR. So we teach hands-only CPR in the community. So we really want to help save lives. Many lives are lost every year. Approximately like 300,000 are lost because people don't know how to do hands-on CPR or how to use an AED. So that's what we're out here doing in the community.
What's been the response on the street right here today?
It's been an overwhelming response. We've had over 30 people already, and we started at 2:00. So,
tell me a little bit about the importance of having that hands-on CPR training. I mean, I'm CPR trained. Michael over here is CPR trained. So, but for the people who may not know, like, why is it to have those skills? Why is that so important?
It's important to have those skills in the community, especially with young children and people taking care of older adults and everything in the house. So with that, learning a hands-on CPR, we're saving a life. And so we teach everyone to look for your environment, make sure you're safe. We tell them how to step up to someone who they see that's down on the ground, is not responding. We also show them how to do that with an adult and with a baby. That is important in helping our community to save lives. They need to know how to do hands-only CPR. They need to know how to look for an AED and how to ask for help. We also teach them how to find AEDs around in different spots like the hospital and airports and schools. So we're trying to teach our community the benefit of doing CPR.
And just this event itself today, why is it so important to have something like this in the community?
It's important. What I've found thus far being in our community is that a lot of us don't know, people of color do not know how to do hands-on in CPR. They don't know the drill. They don't know how to do compressions. So we teach them just the basics to help save a life. Even just doing a little bit is better than nothing. And so that's what we're trying to get across to everyone in the community. And we let them know Damar Hamlin would not be here today if we didn't use an AED. And they knew CPR. And so that's what we go out into the community, into the community to teach. So our people will know how to save a life.
Would you recommend this for other people, for this coming to this event, showing up at this event? Would you recommend it for other community members, other businesses?
I do. I absolutely recommend it. Yesterday we had a teaching event at Maryville High School. So I think it's Maryville. Sorry, I don't know how you pronounce it here. So we've been in different areas and different communities. It's needed in all communities.
And for our final conversation from the Black Business Block Party, we feature Dior Lindsay Virgil from the Osborne Association.
So the work that I do at the Osborne Association in Buffalo in particular is we really work to support children and families affected by a loved one's incarceration. And I would even more so say that we primarily support children of incarcerated parents. Statistically, you know, it happens so often, and it's actually considered the fourth most common adverse childhood experience. Mm. So why there aren't any, you know, more services available, particularly geared to that sort of need, is really why Osborne, as a New York City-based organization, really wanted to, you know, come to Buffalo and just offering that support to children and families.
And, you know, again, it seems obvious, but it's worth always having the professional kind of lay it out, the types of impact, that how this impacts kids, and perhaps maybe understanding, whether through statistics or anecdotes, what might be the pathway for a kid whose parent, mother or father, is spending time incarcerated.
Yeah, so actually the late Ann Attalus Estrin, who was really just so... just such a pillar of this work. One of her most popular quotes is, children of incarcerated parents are like all children, like some children and like no children, right? So just recognizing that, you know, having this very unique experience of having a parent that's incarcerated can very, you know, just look like any other type of trauma response that a kid can highlight or show or display. So just in terms of that, you know, when it comes to ACEs and recognizing adverse childhood experiences and the way in which those things are expressed by kids, but recognizing for children of incarcerated parents in particular, that additional stigma and the hardships that can also be accompanied are additional layers that are important for folks to be able to, you know, support kids and just recognize those other pieces. That can mean a loss of a social circle because of that stigma, right? Especially if the situation is highly public, you know, for a child. And you know, just thinking about ways in which effective access for children to be able to meet with those parents, you know, and every single family is different and every child is different and every circumstance is different. But generally speaking, just thinking about ways in which helping to either establish or maintain or strengthen those family bonds, and just thinking about ways to do that. That's really the work that we do at Osborne is really focused on in Buffalo. So that's highlighted through our video visiting program, which is all free. And even if you don't have opportunities to get transportation to any of our offices to do video visiting, we cover that transportation as well to make sure that, you know, if, you know, having a ride might be a challenge, you could still have that opportunity to visit your parent, to be able to have those really effective and therapeutic conversations. They laugh during those visits. They cry during those visits. They practice dances during those visits. They play games, you know. It's never meant to replace, you know, anything like for Zoom, you know, or like Microsoft Teams, like anything virtual, you know, you can't really replicate that virtually. You can't replicate a hug in that way, but it's a nice supplement to be able to continue maintaining those bonds through an opportunity like video visiting or any of our youth programs or anything else that we do educational wise as well at our office.
There's a lot to talk about there. Let's talk about, you know, why you guys are tabling here at the Block Party.
Oh, yes. So outreach is one of our favorite things to do. I think it's important for folks to know, you know, as we actually just recently celebrated our fifth year of having programming in Buffalo, as a newer program, just making sure that folks know that the resources that we offer, the educational opportunities that we have, the relationship building, the trips that we take, is something that, you know, is not only not seen anywhere else really in terms of being able to offer a service particularly for this need, but also finding ways to destigmatize it as well. So being involved in the community and talking with people that are having these experiences and haven't been able to always openly share that with other people without feeling the shame, the guilt, or the stigma that can come with it, to be able to respond with that with us that are trained in being able to respond to that, it definitely has a validating and also, I would just say, an eye-opening, you know, experience for folks that are having that issue and didn't know that there were any opportunities out there for them to be able to talk about.
And that will do it for our conversations from the Black Business Block Party. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.